Hey, it's Brian Curtis from The Ringer, and I want to tell you about the Press Box podcast. The Press Box is a podcast for anybody who likes news, whether it's about sports or politics or pop culture, and wants to understand how that news really gets made. We have new shows every Monday and Thursday. We have long interviews with everyone from John Krakauer to Joe Buck. Your social media feeds are bursting with information every day. Let us help you sort it out. Join us on the Press Box.
This episode of The Town is brought to you by FX's Feud, Capote versus the Swans. The second installment in Ryan Murphy's Feud anthology tells the story of acclaimed writer Truman Capote, once a confidant to society's most elite women, whom he nicknamed the Swans. Starring Naomi Watts, Diane Lane, Chloe Sevigny, Calista Flockhart, Demi Moore, Molly Ringwald, and Tom Hollander. For your Emmy consideration, visit fxnetworks.com/FYC. This episode is brought to you by Netflix, presenting The Crown, as the beloved series bids farewell. Deserving of praise on every level, says New York Magazine. Throughout its groundbreaking 6-season run, The Crown has featured 3 different casts, earned 273 award nominations, and secured 70 award wins, including Outstanding Drama Series. Critics rave, The Crown secures its place in the pantheon of television history. From creator and writer Peter Morgan, the final season stars Imelda Staunton, Dominic West, and SAG Award winner Elizabeth Debicki. The Crown, for your Emmy consideration in all categories. It is Tuesday, April 30th. Another day, another ridiculous twist in the saga of Paramount. Yesterday, Bob Bakish, the CEO of the company for the past 7 years, was abruptly fired. Technically, he stepped down, as they always do. He'll get $50 million to go away. But it's a pretty major development, considering Paramount is in the middle of a potential sale. If you remember, Sherry Redstone, whose family company controls Paramount Global, she's in exclusive talks with Skydance Media, run by the Ellison family, for a complicated transaction to buy out Redstone for $2 billion and then merge Skydance with Paramount. Sherry really wants that deal to happen, but there's been a shareholder revolt / resistance to that deal because they would not make out nearly as well as she would. Another person who didn't like the Skydance deal, Bob Bakish. He's been privately critical of the whole thing, in part because there wouldn't be a place for him at the merged company, and in part because another deal is potentially on the table, a $26 billion offer from Apollo, the private equity firm, which would take care of all the Paramount shareholders, not just primarily Sherry. Skydance upped its offer over the weekend to try to head off that criticism, and now Bakish is out, replaced by a 3-person office of the CEO made up of the heads of the film and TV divisions. Remember, Paramount Global includes the movie studio, CBS, cable channels like MTV and Comedy Central, and the Paramount Plus and Pluto TV streamers. Meanwhile, amid all this, the company reported its earnings yesterday as well. Not great timing for that. They were actually okay. The losses in streaming have narrowed. Subscribers hit 71 million thanks to the Super Bowl being simulcast on Paramount Plus. And the U.S. streaming division is on track to be profitable next year, so they say. So what's the big problem here? Why sack the CEO? Well, in addition to the pending sale, which Sherry wants to get across the finish line, the company still hasn't figured out how to replace all the declining TV revenue with digital dollars, the big, big question mark in the industry right now. And my sources have been saying that Sherry was upset that Bakish missed on a couple big deals. He didn't pull the trigger on a $3 billion offer for Showtime, and there was another offer for BET. It's still unclear in the bigger picture why Paramount is trying to compete with the big guns in streaming while its finances are so perilous. That's what we're getting into today with Lucas Shaw, a special Tuesday appearance by our Monday guy. Today, it's the firing of Bob Bakish, what the heck is going on with Sherry Redstone and her potential deals, and how it all impacts the wild sale process for Paramount. From The Ringer and Puck, I'm Matt Bellany, and this is The Town. All right, we are here with Lucas Shaw from Bloomberg. Thanks for joining us on a Tuesday. We had to wait for the big Paramount reveals and earnings yesterday. Quite the turn of events at Paramount.
Yeah, I leave for 4 days and you let the CEO get sacked. And
I did. I let him get sacked. That was all me.
It was all you.
Did you listen to the earnings call yesterday?
I did not because I was on a flight back from Arizona. But from what I have observed, it was 9 minutes and I didn't miss much, which is par for the course. Usually when there are big corporate developments at a company that happen right before an earnings call, they don't even talk about them. It's a joke.
But there's not talking about it. And then there's what happened yesterday, which was straight out of Succession. It's like everybody knew what was going on. And yet the call was about 7 minutes long. They took no questions. They read from a press release, a brief press release. And then the kicker, the Mission Impossible music came on and played us out. And it was like, honestly, it was one of the greatest earnings calls I've ever been on because everybody was just cracking up on Twitter. Everyone's going nuts. They said nothing. And I know they can't really say anything, but you got to say something. You got to at least say, you know, we are charting a path forward. We have had a change in leadership and there will be reasons for that come out later, but they did nothing, which of course leads everyone to speculate.
I don't expect them to say anything in that scenario. Cause what do you, if you are the trio of new leaders, Brian Robbins, Chris McCarthy, George Cheeks,
the film studio guy and the two TV heads.
There are top executives at the company who have been pushing for like the JV conversations that they've had with Peacock and with Comcast about putting together Paramount Plus and Peacock. A lot of that came from senior executives at the company who are pushing for it. So they've definitely had a role in it, but they're not the ones negotiating this deal. They don't have the insight or, more importantly, the authority to say, this is our status update on our negotiations to sell ourselves.
That's true. And the deal you're talking about is the Skydance deal, which is happening at the National Amusements level.
Well, no, right now it's happening at the Paramount board
right,
level.
With the involvement of the special committee of the Paramount board, which is evaluating this deal and trying to figure out whether they can sell it to the Paramount shareholders. Currently, doesn't seem like it's going great, but Skydance upped the dollar amount this past weekend. I want to go through three things. What actually happened to Backish? Why did he get fired? And then how does this play out if there is a deal? And more importantly, how does this play out if there is no deal and we are back to square one with this company? So give me your impression of why you think Backish got fired.
Setting aside the fact that he doesn't want to do the merger that his controlling shareholder wants to do, and he was bad at his job. Is
he bad at his job or was he just the yes man for Shari Redstone and that strategy turned out not to be the best strategy?
I mean, both. He was obviously trying to come up with a strategy that would satisfy his owner, the woman whose family and who owns the company, because she was the person who installed him as the leader and the person who could, if she really wanted, replace him at any moment. And so, a lot of the blame for look, as you and I have written about, and you wrote most recently, a lot of the blame for this dates back way before this, right? This company has been an utter shit show for a decade, if not
more. Two decades, arguably.
Yeah. The decision to split it didn't go super well back in 2006. Philippe Domont as the CEO of Viacom was a complete disaster. The fight for control. You've either had major strategic blunders or uncertainty as to who was in charge, and none of that leads to positive management. All that being said, you can't look at the last 3 to 5 years and say, oh, yes, the leadership at Paramount has done a great job running the company. Right. Their stock is still down more than their peers. Their streaming service still loses a ton of money. Their movie studio is considerably smaller than its peers. There's nothing about the company that is functioning better than or even equal to most of its peers.
True. And as you said, a lot of that came from before Backish was in charge. But the decisions under his watch, I mean, arguably the big one is the decision to go into general interest streaming and compete with Netflix, with Paramount Plus. That, it turns out, has not been the best for the company because it cost a ton of money that they didn't have, and it is not profitable soon enough. Maybe if they gave him more time in a couple of years, they turn a corner and it becomes profitable. They keep promising, but that decision turned out to be wrong. They should have either abandoned streaming and just become a Sony Pictures style arms dealer, or had a limited streaming presence like CBS All Access was and sold most of their content elsewhere. The bigger one is this decision not to part with the assets. Showtime, BET, these are dying cable assets, arguably dead in Showtime's case, that they had money on the table for, and Backish chose not to do that. And from everyone I've talked to, Shari really started turning on him when that didn't happen and it became clear that was a mistake, when the dividend stopped delivering money to her family company, and when the debt of the company was downgraded to junk. Those were the arrows that got him.
Yeah, I don't think, if you go back to the decision to go into streaming, I don't really think that they had another alternative. The other option would have just been to take a slightly different approach or strategy, try to form a joint venture then.
No, they could have just continued with CBS All Access and then sold off everything else.
This notion that they could have been an arms dealer, I think, is pretty ignorant if you look at what the company had.
Tell me why.
Because the company makes all of its money from cable networks. Most of its employees work at cable networks. So if you are going to be an arms dealer, that means you are a studio. If you're going to be a studio, that means that they would have fired the majority of their employees.
Yes.
You can say yes, but that's not really a strategy.
Yes, it is. It's a strategy to significantly downsize for the reality of the 21st century digital media business and say, you know what? The cable era was a good time. We all had fun, but we're too late. We've been mismanaged for too long. That party will slowly run its course, and we will transition into the world's greatest owner of franchises content delivery system for other distributors.
I think people are overestimating how successful Sony is as an arms dealer. They just decide, like, oh, it must be working for them because they don't have TV networks. But you get ground down on margins because streaming services like Netflix don't have to pay the same premiums. You don't have the same ownership of a lot of these shows. It's not that great being an arms dealer. It's fine.
Well, it's true the long term that the question is whether the arms dealer strategy is
fine. It's just a different company. And if you were going to make that, if you were going to make that decision 4 years ago to do it, then the real answer is then they should have sold the whole thing then.
Well, they should have. They should have sold off parts like Rupert Murdoch did. Rupert had the best strategy. He saw what was coming. He knew he wasn't big enough. And he said, you know what? There are buyers for these assets right now. And if Shari, we saw the Journal reported earlier this week that there was a $5.5 to $6 billion offer on the table for Showtime in 2021, the same year that they launched Paramount Plus.
The only thing I'll say about that, and that was from Jessica Tunkel's story, and she's done a really remarkable job covering Paramount. I believe that offer was from Mark Greenberg. Mark Greenberg has tried to buy a lot of things and Blackstone. And has not had the money to pull it off. I would want to know more about that offer. But yes, there have definitely been opportunities to sell assets or to sell the whole thing. There's no question that if you rewind 4 or 5 years and you could sell the whole thing for $30 to $40 billion instead of the situation they're in now, that would have been better. I just don't think the arms dealer thing is as realistic as people think it was, because Sony is a much smaller studio than most of these other businesses. And you still would need a strategy for what to do with the TV networks. You would need some kind of streaming strategy. Just say, like, run it with CBS All Access. CBS All Access was a good foundation and a sign that CBS saw into the future, but it was a tiny, tiny business. It was a niche product.
You know what it hasn't done? It hasn't lost several billion dollars in 3 years trying to chase Netflix.
Yeah, but if you were a media company that owned a bunch of TV networks, as most of these companies did, there was reason to believe that you had to take that path and try to compete. The failing was in the way they went about it, not in the idea that they needed to try to compete in streaming. Because if you weren't going to compete in streaming, you all should have just sold and given up at the time. And I understand why not everyone wanted to do that. Yes, Rupert Murdoch looked super smart. Jeff Bukas looked super smart. But some of these folks wanted to compete. They just didn't do it the right way.
This episode is brought to you by Netflix, presenting The Crown, as the beloved series bids farewell. Deserving of praise on every level, says New York Magazine. Throughout its groundbreaking 6-season run, The Crown has featured 3 different casts, earned 273 award nominations, and secured 70 award wins, including Outstanding Drama Series. Critics rave, The Crown secures its place in the pantheon of television history. From creator and writer Peter Morgan, the final season stars Imelda Staunton, Dominic West, and SAG Award winner Elizabeth Debicki. The Crown, for your Emmy consideration in all categories.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Okay, so that's the Backus element. How do you think his leaving impacts Sherry's ability to get this Skydance deal done? Or is there no change in it and we're just going to see whether the special committee of Paramount will endorse this deal, whether the shareholders will be upset or whether she cares, and whether David Ellison is willing to, you know, cross the finish line here? Is there any impact of him leaving on this deal?
I don't think him leaving has a huge impact. I think it's really going to come down to, does the board believe that this deal makes sense? And how scared are they of what shareholders other than Sherry Redstone are going to say?
Do you think that the upping of the deal points, the $3 billion to supposedly shore up the balance sheet, do you think that makes any difference? That's the latest offer. And Skydance is describing it as last and best offer.
It's a sign that both Skydance and the company realize that a lot of their shareholders are not thrilled with the current offer on the table, and they mostly because of how it would treat shareholders, common shareholders, and they're doing what they can to try to make it a more appealing offer. I don't know that it puts the deal over the edge. I have been, I guess, more recently under the assumption that they would find a way to make it work because Sherry Redstone ultimately controls the company and David Ellison wants to buy the company. And if that's the case and they have general agreement on pricing, that they should be able to have it happen. But there's been such strong pushback from common shareholders. And
they're whiners. They're just whiners. I have so little sympathy for people who buy into a controlled company and then complain about how it's controlled. Do you think the Facebook shareholders love that Mark Zuckerberg was obsessed with the metaverse for 3 years and poured billions and billions of dollars into something that may or may not ever happen? No, but he controls the company. Like, Sherry Redstone controls this company. When all these people bought in, they bought in for that ride. They invested in her family. So to now come around and be like, oh, you know, we want a deal that's great for all shareholders. Sure. Okay. And maybe the Apollo deal, the $26 billion that Apollo apparently wants to spend on Paramount Global itself, maybe that is better for all of them. But this is the deal.
Do we think that that's a better deal?
Listen, I think the deal that is like actively being negotiated is better than one that is like in the ether, supposedly going to happen with financing we don't know about and with a regulatory scheme we're not sure about either. So I don't necessarily think Apollo is the better deal, especially since they're making noises about bringing in Sony Pictures into this deal, which suggests they feel that they need a partner to get it done, and also brings its own problems because you've got a Japanese company looking to buy a company that owns CBS, and you've got all kinds of potential issues with the regulatory environment where two studios would essentially be combining, taking five buyers down to four. So I don't necessarily think Apollo is better, but certainly people at Paramount Global do, including Bob Backus. So, you know, that's where we are.
Or they don't necessarily think it's better. They just don't want to do the Skydance deal, and this gives them a way out of that.
Sure, but that assumes there's a better option.
Right now, you're looking at two options. One is you take the Skydance deal. Good deal for Sherry. The company gets some fresh resources, fresh management. Current investors feel like they get hosed. Or you do the Apollo deal where private equity is probably going to break this thing up. You're not even sure it's a real deal. You don't know if they have financing. You don't know how regulators would feel about it. But the potential economics for common shareholders are a little bit better. And then if neither one of those happens, what most likely happens is Sherry just sells NAI, her family holding company that controls the company, and you end up with a new owner anyways. Because right. There will be people who are more than happy to pay a couple billion dollars to control Paramount.
Oh, yeah. But this whole notion that the Paramount shareholders are getting hosed by this Ellison deal, like, maybe they're not getting cash in hand that they might have gotten from the Apollo deal. But this is what I argued with Bill Cohan last week. Like, you're essentially betting on whether David Ellison and his family are better stewards of this company than the daughter of the guy who built it into what it is. And given the deep pockets of the Ellisons and the fact that David Ellison wants to be in this business, wants to manage these assets, has people lined up with Jeff Shell and potentially Jeff Zucker at Redbird coming in to manage the assets. They are experienced media managers. Like, the pitch to these Paramount shareholders isn't terrible, even though they probably would love to be taken out at a higher price and got the money in their pocket right now. The pitch is not bad for what this company could be, especially considering what it is right now, which is not great.
I think we're aligned on this idea that if you think there is a possible or a promising future for the company, it's probably better to bring in a new owner with resources and new leadership. The counterargument that I've heard many people make is you can just change the strategy without needing a new owner and or without needing to do this Skydance deal, which is dilutive to current shareholders and maybe not the best for all involved.
But who's doing that deal? Shari Redstone, the guy who enabled Bob Bakish for 7 years?
You would basically hire a new CEO to come in and do the things that Ellison and Shell are going to do anyways, which is cut a bunch of costs, overhaul the streaming strategy, and modernize the business. All the stuff that you say they should have done 5 years ago.
Okay. So that leads us into the third topic, which is the path forward if they don't do this deal. And that leads us to this Office of the CEO, which has been created with the three heads of the different content divisions right now, Chris McCarthy and George Cheeks in TV, Brian Robbins in film. And these guys say they have a plan. They presented one to the board, which apparently, you know, I guess was okay. They have not revealed what this plan is for the company long term. I kind of understand that. They're in the middle of these sale talks. They don't want to tip their hand. But assuming these other deals fall apart, Paramount is back to square one. Its stock would presumably tank. And now you've got this three-headed monster that is guiding Paramount. Who would actually be in charge here? Who's making the strategic decisions at this company when there is three people running it?
No idea.
None of whom, by the way, have ever been CEO of a publicly traded company. None of whom have really been in a top leadership position at a media company. They're all experienced guys.
Brian was the CEO of a company, Brian Robbins, but it was a small digital media company.
Awesomeness. I mean, yeah. And it sold and then he moved on. Like, they're all successful. They all done interesting things in their careers.
They've all run large divisions of companies, but certainly none of them has had a job quite like being the CEO of a company with thousands of employees.
And you talk about how they could just stay the course. They don't have to do the Ellison deal, and Shari can hire someone to come in and do all of these needed and difficult cuts and strategic changes. Are those these guys to do that?
That's a question, right? They've stressed that this current situation is temporary, right? Because they want them there as long as these negotiations are happening. My assumption would be that if Shari doesn't sell the whole company, she will sell her controlling stake, and whoever that new owner would be would bring in new management. I would be very surprised if we had this troika in charge in 18 months.
Yeah. I agree there. Who do you think these mystery buyers of National Amusements might be?
I think there's some wealthy individuals. There are probably some other financial firms.
I mean, $2 billion is not that much. You and I should raise it and run Paramount.
That doesn't sound very fun.
You might have to give up your Dodger tickets.
It's worth, though, I will run Paramount for less than the $30 million that leadership has been paid to run it. You know,
that's
you give
true.
Me, you give me $7.5 million, I'm in.
Bakish got $51 million to go away. So no violins for him. Although less than the $72 million that Philippe Doman got to go away. So if they're having a dick measuring contest on the CEO payout.
He made a fatal mistake. You know, he didn't start a huge lawsuit and try to drag it out and all that stuff.
No, if you remember, Philippe Doman was threatening to do very invasive examinations of Sumner Redstone to determine his mental competency. And that was the leverage factor that he used to get a settlement for himself. Yeah, good guy, strong guy. All right, so next steps. Let's bring this home. How does this play out over the next week or two? Do we have a deal with Ellison? Will we know by Friday when the expiration of the exclusive period comes?
There won't be a deal by Friday. I think we'll either have an exclusive window is over and now, like, let's see if you're full of shit, Apollo, or an extension. And if it's an extension, it's probably a sign that they feel like they can figure it out.
Yeah, because the board will not likely just bless the Skydance deal and then say, we're done. They will likely say, okay, we have an agreement in principle here, but what else is out there, right? They've got to shop it. Or can they not shop it? Because there's this question over whether there will be a vote of the majority of the minority shareholders to approve the deal. Bloomberg reported that. And the Journal, and I think CNBC reported that there would be a vote of shareholders, but then I've heard from Skydance sources that they haven't agreed on that.
I think it's a little more nuanced and complicated than that. What I would say is this is a publicly traded company. If Apollo and Sony really want to buy this thing, they can make an offer. The board doesn't have to engage with it. And right now, because of the agreement on exclusivity, technically can't. But that doesn't stop Apollo and Sony from submitting an offer and saying, here is our $27 billion bid to buy Paramount.
Yeah, with Sony, it could be larger than the $26 billion
they
already have.
They can do it now. They can do it tomorrow. They can do it Friday, because that will give the board something to think about. So even if they agree on the framework of a deal with Skydance, yeah, there's nothing that stops someone from coming in and saying, are you sure you don't want to take this deal?
Right. And it could be so attractive that they really can't ignore it. And there's this question about whether Apollo has raised the money. I mean, Apollo is one of the biggest private equity firms in the world. How is there a question about whether it is able to raise this money?
It's not a question of whether they're able. It's a question of what is the money? Are they funding it fully out of their fund?
Well, no, and with interest rates where they are, how much the money costs.
Yeah, they have the ability to do it off their balance sheet. It just would be a really big deal. Or they could syndicate some of the money and have other people participate. The issue is they have not spelled out where their money is coming from. In the case of Skydance, you might not like the deal, but you know where the money is from. So for Apollo and Sony, they've gotten all these common shareholders to come and say, no, let's do that deal, let's do that deal. But to get the board behind that deal, they're going to have to be a little more open about, this is our offer, we really want to do this, and here's how we're going to pay for it. It's the same issue with Byron Allen, right? Yes. This guy who's come along and made a bunch of offers, right? But it's one thing to say, I'm going to pay you X billion dollars for your company. It's another thing to say, this is where that money is coming from.
Right. And we know where the Skydance money is coming from. It's coming from Larry's, cloud computing stock and his pineapple operation on Lanai. So yeah, that's pretty reliable. So update your odds. Skydance get this, or Apollo, or no deal?
I'm totally making this up. But let's say 30% Skydance deal happens, 10% Apollo deal happens, 30 to 40% Sherry does an NAI deal. And then, like, I don't know, this isn't rounding up to 100, so I'll modify the numbers. But like 15% status quo, nothing happens. I think the most likely scenario is either the Skydance deal happens or Sherry sells NAI to someone else with an Apollo deal or a nothing happens as sort of the C&D choices.
I'm a little more bullish on Skydance happening, but I could also see him walking away and being like, these people are crazy. I don't want any part of this. So we'll see.
I have been with you in thinking that this would happen, but there are just a lot of hurdles getting thrown in the way right now.
All right, Lucas, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Matt.
We are back with the call sheet. Craig, are you excited? Summer movie season is here. We're going to do a whole episode on this, but we've got The Fall Guy this weekend.
Yes, I'm very excited. I'm seeing it today.
Oh, right. You are going to the premiere tonight, the LA premiere. I have already seen it. I've seen most of it. I stepped out for a little bit, but I saw most of it at CinemaCon. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I did. It's like a throwback a little bit. It's like these kinds of movies used to be the big summer movies before the superheroes and the fantasy spectacles stomped all over them. This movie was moved. It was later in the summer, and it was moved into this slot when Deadpool moved because of the strike.
Yeah, as the producer of the Rewatchables, I've had to go back and watch so many action movies from the 80s and 90s, and I've fallen in love with so many of them. And this looks like, you know, like a Lethal Weapon or something like that, which are some of my favorite movies.
Yeah, it's like a two-hander. Budget is $130. The tracking is between 30 and 35 for the weekend, which seems a little low, given the marketing that has gone into this and given how hot Gosling is coming off of Barbie. So I'm going to take the over on this. Let's say it's at 33, split the difference. I'm going to take the over and give Universal the benefit of the doubt here that they can open this movie a little higher. For the first weekend in May, this is going to be a horrible comp to last year when Guardians of the Galaxy 3 opened, and that was like, I believe, over $100 million. The box office is already down 20% this year from last year. These May comps to last year are going to be pretty bad, I think. But for this movie to get to, you know, profits, probably about 300, a little bit more than that. David Leitch, who directed, he also did Deadpool 2. He did Bullet Train. I think Bullet Train's probably a more of a comp here because it had Brad Pitt. That movie only got to 239 in 2022. So this movie's got to do more than that for Universal to be happy.
This will make more than that. Gosling has way more juice right now than Brad Pitt did. I think
that's right. And I think the Emily Blunt factor, my wife wants to see this, and she had no interest in Bullet Train. So I think that they're going to get a lot more women for Fall Guy. It just feels like more of a date night movie.
Yeah, and if this pulls through and hits the over, then my Movie Stars Are Back case is supported if Gosling can pull through for me.
That's right. You are long on Movie Stars. You're actually kind of on a roll. You had Movie Stars Are Back, and you had Sex in Movies is Back. Nudity in Movies is Back. And both those with like Challengers and Anyone But You. And
you could keep going back. No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence is when it really started.
Totally. You're prescient. You're seeing the light here. Studios are just catching up to your insights. All right. That's the show for today. I want to thank my guest, Lucas Shaw. I want to thank producer Craig Horbeck, our editor, Jesse Lopez, and I want to thank you. We will see you one more time this week.